to come to order, and first we set a public hearing for the Smart School Investment Plan. So it's 5:52, and it can... No. Debbie, can you do us a pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And Joanne, can you take the roll, please?
Andrew Brockway.
Here.
Kathy Buckley.
Here.
Joseph Graziani.
Here.
Michael Hagedorn. Leonard King.
Here.
Ed Marin.
Here.
Jason Marsh. Debbie Pasno.
Here.
Pauline Stone.
Here.
Michaela.
All right, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the agenda.
Motion.
Motion by Debbie.
Second.
Second by Leonard. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, and as I stated, we have a public hearing scheduled for the Smart Schools Investment Plan. I'd like to welcome anyone from the public that is present tonight, and we're looking for feedback regarding the district's plan for the Smart Schools Investment that was passed by the legislature on recommendation by the governor. So if there's anyone that would like to address the board, please step forward and state your name and whatever your comments are. Seeing nobody. Number four. All right, the resolution that is authorizing the public hearing and the affidavit publication of the official notice was published on February 26, 2016 in the Press Republican, and the plan was also posted on the district's website on January 6, 2016. Seeing nobody from the audience that wants to put comments on record, we're going to conclude the public hearing at this time, and I'd ask for a motion to close the hearing.
Motion.
Motion by Joseph.
Second.
Second by Kathy. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, so
keep going.
Okay. I don't know if we advertise later.
No.
Okay. So since we did advertise the board start time at 5:45, we do not have to wait until 6:15 to continue. We've also scheduled another public comment section of tonight's meeting. So if anyone from the audience wants to speak on anything other than the Smart Schools and Investment Act, please step forward. Seeing no one at this time, we also have presentations scheduled tonight, and we're going to be examining the draft contingency and the growth budget, 0% contingency, 1.5% proposed. And with that, school business executive Mary Blaine and Superintendent Dan Harris.
Maximize that up in the right here. Yeah, right there.
Okay, so
what we wanted to show you on this was really big picture and start with where we are and where we've come from on this. You'll see that this column represents the tax levy at a 1.5%, or what we would reflect as a growth budget. The center column is the tax levy at 0%. In the right-hand column is the tax levy at the tax levy formula, which is a minus 1.38%. As we compare these, when we look across, this is what the actual difference is in the tax levy compared to the prior year at each of those. At zero would be zero, and then at a minus 1.38, the negative 272,000. We roll forward the governor's state aid estimate runs, which were published in January, and we get an accumulative year-over-year revenue estimated increase. At a zero tax levy, this would be the overall increase, and a minus 178 would be the increase with the tax cap levy at the negative. Coming down, rolling
Mary,
forward.
Mary, can you stop for just a second? In the governor's state aid, that line right there. Can you just review? I know we do this every year, but can you review for everybody? There's a published number, and I'm not asking you to quote it off the top of your head. And then what we calculate as our real number. Let's go through that.
So we get the total state aid run coming in from the governor. We take a comparison of that January run versus where were we last April when we got the legislative run. So rather than comparing January to January, we're really looking at what the January governor's run was that just came out a couple of months ago. I can't believe I'm saying that already, but it is March, versus the April legislative run, what we projected for state aid last year when we wrapped up our budget and the board voted on the budget in late April.
So we understand that the governor's run, it makes it look like there's more because he's going from his run last year to his run to this year, but he's not factoring in that the legislator, the Senate and the Assembly added money to his run in January. He doesn't factor that in, so it seems like it's a much larger increase, but it's not. It's the increase that we're looking at is we take what they promised us, and then this year, what's the difference with the promising us this year? Now, that being said, we'll look at that 94,000, there's usually the Senate will or the legislature will come in and add to that. What we're worried about is, well, we're not really worried about it, but what we're hearing is that they're going to add to that, and they're going to add to take away the GEA. So that's really good for our communities because just in this area, there's millions of dollars in GEA still owed to school districts in our BOCES, just our neighbors. We've been, all of our GEA has been restored. So if their only move is to restore the GEA, we won't see an increase onto that number. And traditionally, we do see an increase onto that number.
The other caveat that we should point out to you is in this number, the 94,000, in the governor's proposal, he introduced a new revenue line item this year called the community schools. And community schools allocation for Beekman Town District was approximately 98,000 of that, which has strings attached as to how that revenue gets spent. So overall, we've got a $94,000 increase. The biggest portion of that is community schools allocation to us, which is a new programming we haven't seen before. Whether the legislature agrees with the governor or not, that'll be it. You know, we'll learn that in April. The 15-16 roll forward budget at the 39.985 million, that's our current budget we're living in this year. Take these adjustments that we're looking at with the projected revenues, would forecast this is what our proposed budgets would be. So at a 1.5% tax levy with the state aid as we know it right now, 40.3 million roughly is what we're looking at for a proposed 16-17 budget. At a 0% tax levy, we're looking at roughly $40,080,000. Drop it down, that is just the state aid increase over the prior year at a 0.24%. So that's roughly a quarter of 1% increase in a zero scenario. In a negative scenario, we're looking at a minus 178,000 year-over-year budget, or roughly minus 0.45%, or just under half of a percent. In the tax levy increase at 1.5%, we would be looking at a $390,000 year-over-year budget increase, which is roughly just under 1% budget to budget, to put it in perspective.
Any questions on those three columns? Mr. King?
What would we lose if we ended up with the center column fire score in the school year? What would we lose?
We're going to go over that. That's our next slide.
Oh, okay.
Any other questions? So we thought we'd start, not trying to overwhelm you, we do have another session later this month, but we thought we'd start with this slide, and it kind of shows you our big movers, and then what would be new or what wouldn't happen, I guess, with that 0% contingency.
Can we make that larger?
I think. Yes, I have the same problem. I don't have my glasses tonight, so we want to make that a little bit larger. Okay, that's pretty good.
Thank you.
So we have on the top, and Mary, feel free to jump in, but
okay.
So those two at the very top in revenues, those are the two lines that Mary just went over that kind of calculate down to the bottom of the last slide. The one on the left, the first column of numbers on the left, that is with our 1.5, and then the column in the middle is with our 0. And then the column on the right are some we're just trying to show you some differences. So when you look at the first column, obviously there's a difference of about $300,000 when you, the difference between a 0 and a 1.5 from our local taxpayers, okay? Then most of the lines, as you'll see, most of the lines stay the same all the way down. So if we say the budget expenditures, wages are gonna be the same, health insurance premium increase, it doesn't matter whether on contingency or not. We are looking to help us this year with the HRA, dipping in and taking out what we normally allocate for our health reimbursement arrangement, $35,000 for that. The health insurance open enrollment, we're in a very interesting spot here at Beekman Town. We're one of the only districts where 72 to 74% of our employees take health insurance, so roughly 25% of our employees don't take health insurance. But as the health insurance sector changes, and as we are again at a very nice number, 3.5% increase, you know, at other places you're looking at 8-9% increases. So as we keep our premiums lower, our program becomes much more attractive to other families. So we have to guard against that, and $52,000 is a couple family plans. So or maybe five or so individual plans. So we do have a budget for that to make sure we don't have to cut programming if we have enrollments. Our BOCES admin is going to be the same no matter what. That $61,000 increase this year. Bus purchases. Go ahead, Mr. King.
In the past, I know we've lost bus purchases if we went to contingency.
How right.
And we're not losing that anymore.
Yeah, so that's a great point. We've done some research on that. So we're trying to, so you see that in the line, it's not as a voter item, that's in our budget. And we are trying, because we've gone over this with the Board of Education, we pay cash for those buses out of our budget, we save all the finance charges. So we do save, we think it's a better move for our taxpayers. So previously, you could do that when you went, you could take out bus purchases when you moved to contingency. I would submit to the board that we could take that out if you moved to contingency, but one of the factors that go into a contingency budget are the safety and health and the wellness of our students. And knowing that we went so many years without purchasing buses, and knowing that our buses, we had a bus breakdown the other day on the Military Turnpike, and it was the really cold morning. We haven't had many of them this year, thank God. And I think it was -6 degrees in the morning. And it doesn't take long for students to be on a bus and have that bus become the outside temperature when the bus breaks down. So I would submit to you that we don't want to continue that trend that was started a few years ago of not purchasing buses. So I would say that we would say it's a safety, at this point it's a safety issue. If we didn't have a track record, if we had a track record of always purchasing buses, you can get by a year without doing it. But we just reinstituted buying buses. So that's really very important.
And one of the, another key change that we've made for the district over the last couple of years is that we move the buses into the budget as opposed to separately purchasing them with debt, hand in hand with saving over $20,000 in interest charges over that time period. But as well, it's in the detailed line items of the budget, so we're saving those debt service costs on that. Normally, it is and could be seen as a contingent item, but because of the situation we're in, the board could declare that to be a safety item and an emergency item.
So that's why we're calculating it in both, but it is the board's discretion whether they want to make that decision based on safety. So retiring debt, we've gone over this numerous times at board meetings. So the taxpayers some time ago voted to allocate a certain amount of tax dollars to improve our buildings here at Beekman Town, and some of that debt is retiring right now. That's one of the reasons why we're at that negative 1.38% tax cap. But and sometimes you'll see districts say, okay, well, now that money can move over to another line in programming. But I don't like to mix those. I don't like to mix those items, because once you start mixing those items, you can't find that money to improve our buildings, and then you have to go back out to the taxpayers for a large building project. We're saying to the Board of Education is, let's be smart. We have the money here. We have improvements that we know we need to make, and to be good stewards with our all of our buildings and our programming that's based on our buildings here. We do need to keep that over in a building line. The next line is a new line, and it's a line, again, we've been talking about for a couple of years, but this line is a very good line for our facilities, but also for our taxpayers. There's one little-known mechanism within school budgeting that allows districts to go out for very small capital projects, and you receive your state aid back on those projects, and you don't have to go out to voters for approval. And for instance, if we had adopted this years ago, if we had the bus lift issues, we would have been able to remedy that. And you receive, so you put it in one time for $100,000, because that's the max on the capital outlay, but you'll receive 80 cents on every dollar back. So it's really nice. It's a revenue generator, and it allows you to fix your facilities in seamlessly. So you still need your architect, and you still need all the regulations for state planning still apply, but it allows you to go ahead and fix items without having to go out for a capital project all the time. So we like the idea of putting this in, just making this part of who we are at Beekman Town, and fixing small items, relatively small items. You know, we have our facilities are quite large, and build a plan. So one year we're going to fix this, and next year we're going to fix that, and you get 80 cents back on the dollar. So keeps the facilities up and keeps us running.
Another nice benefit of that capital outlay project is the building aid that we get back. It doesn't get spread out over 15 years. We get it back the next year. It's one of those exceptions that facilities planning allows you to do to address capital infrastructure needs on your campus that are of a critical nature without having to wait for the long process of a drawn out capital project.
Right. Mary, why don't you combine, I know I talked a little bit about the retiring debt. I know we've talked a lot about it, but it's important for everybody here. So can you combine the retiring debt again with the ban idea?
Yeah, so really what we have and what we've heard presentations in December and January, that fiscal advisors here talking to us about our strategy for capital projects, capital planning, and the retiring debt. And they really categorize these all together. So really what we had is, this is the appropriate time for us to get the benefit of that and to level out any tax implications or impact on our community, is that we should pursue a capital project now. And the operations committee has been in detailed conversations over the last several months on that. But basically what happens is, this band capital project are the initial costs for pulling that together. So we've already been meeting with architects and engineers. We kind of did it hand in hand initially when we were updating the building conditions survey update, which is a five-year report mandated to go to state education department. We decided at the same time, let's couple that with our capital project needs so that we can do this with the kind of long-range planning in mind. fiscal advisors came in, looked at all of our numbers, our maturing debt, and the cost of the project and the allowances that SED said we could have for capital improvements, and put it all together, and basically these are the numbers that they've come out with. The 718,000 are the calculations that they've made for architectural, engineering, bond council, all of these people that are coming in and helping us put this together. It's part of that capital project and part of the building aid reimbursement that you get back, the revenue that you reap from it. So we've combined those together.
And then the final outcome, everybody knows what the final outcome is. We improve our facilities at no new cost to the taxpayers. We're using the original taxpayer vote from years ago. There was a cost shift then. Taxpayers, the taxes went up. We're using that revenue that was generated years ago to reinvest in our facilities, not to take it and move it someplace else. We think it's the right thing to do for our facilities, the right thing to do for our taxpayers. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, I was talking to our architects on different items, so earlier today. So it's ongoing. It's a lot of work, but it's really good work, and I like where we're heading with that. And the operations committee's been totally on top of that. ADK P-TECH, you probably remember them being here in August after working through issues with State Education Department. So we do have, just like we have a BOCES line, we have other lines, we have a new ADK P-TECH line. That's on top of our grant. But actually, one thing, this is another nice piece too, actually. For a limited amount of time, that line will be totally restored to us through BOCES aid and the grant. So we have that expenditure there until the grant runs out, right? So we have that expenditure there. We'll receive BOCES aid on that expenditure, and then the grant will pick up the rest. And then later on, all it will be, we'll have BOCES aid on that line. So we'll get 60%, roughly 60% back of that line. I think it's 4 years from now, okay? But for the time being, we will, over time, receive that money back. It doesn't happen, you know, later this year, but it does cycle back in. So you should see our BOCES aid go up next year. Another BOCES line is we send students to BOCES, and there was an increase. It's actually one of the smallest increases that I've seen. In OCED, and it's a $12,000 to each line. So a new charge, our election machines, we needed to utilize different election machines. So Joanne has been working very, very hard with Mr. Bell and others, and we're going to be using the county machines, and there's an expense. It's a significant expense. And see, we it's $7,500, but we doubled it, in case you have to go out for another vote. So just trying to demonstrate that there is a cost. People usually ask, well, what's the cost of the vote? I think before we budget maybe like $4,000 or $5,000. I think it's gone up a little bit. The new line is that's in one item but not, or on one line but not on the other line, is we've never had a line for music equipment. So it's always been part of like a high school budget or middle school budget or an elementary budget. But we like the idea of not mingling that with other issues that happen at a school, and just carving out and having a direct line for music like we have for technology and other lines. So this is an incremental step, I think, in the right direction. You see it in one budget, not in the other, and that's just by the constraints put on us by the law. The roughly $10,000 are just insurance increases that we're anticipating. Some of them we know, some of them are coming in. Our digital initiative, 1 year in, right? We're not even 1 year in. And we know right now that we can cut our textbook cost by 10% and our paper cost by 10%. So again, we're taking an incremental approach, but that's $20,000. And we knew that coming in. We knew that was one avenue that was going to help pay for this and make this sustainable. So we're really happy to see that. A couple other things that happened, it's no secret to anybody who's driving by gas stations right now, is the fuel oil and diesel and whatnot has been decreasing kind of at a dramatic rate. So we do, you know, thankfully, we do receive quite a bit of savings there, which really help us on some of these tough numbers. So then you ask, well, what are we going to do? What are we maybe do new this year after we have all these increases and decreases, right? So there's some decreases there that we don't normally have, and we're kind of fortunate. But there certainly are some increases that are somewhat traditional. But even our traditional increases are small for whatever reason. But we do need to add, no matter what, a fifth grade class to Beaton Town Elementary. We have three fourth grade classes, and if we were to combine them into two fifth grade classes, we'd be over the contractual amount, and it would be, we right now we'd be at 30 kids in each class. And we don't think that that's the right thing to do for our teaching and certainly for our learning. So keeping those class sizes, I'm not going to call them small, but keeping them right-sized is important. So the next line is a line that I haven't had much discussion with anybody about, but I wanted to bring this to your attention. We have right now in the window over, as you enter the high school, we have an employee there who greets everybody and runs them through hall pass and works with kids and families and nurse's office and whatnot. It's truly a receptionist type position. It's a different type of receptionist than what most people would visualize, but it's truly entering the building in a proper way. If we move that person who used to work in the library, that person back into the library and hired somebody to be in that position, then the librarian, who's a certified teacher, can teach. Because right now she can't be teaching classes and have people wanting access to the library and want access to the computers or books or whatnot. She's got a man, she mans that desk right over there. Well, if we had an employee man the desk over there at the tune of, it's a trickle effect, so she moves over here, we hire a new employee over in that window, move her over here, for $26,000, we effectively get a new teacher. Okay, so let's take a look at the fifth and sixth group, brand new teacher. Well, we also get a seasoned teacher, right? So a brand new teacher, we don't usually use that line, 65,000, but we're kind of trimming because of our numbers are so low. So we're using 65,000 for an entry-level person with TRS, with FICA, with everything, and health insurance. We effectively get the same thing by making that rotation when we have a seasoned teacher teaching our kids coding, digital citizenship, and other technology-related content. So we think it's a great move. The bang for your buck, your return on your investment here is I think it's phenomenal. We currently share a school resource officer with Saranac Central School District. We find tremendous benefit when he's here in the halls. When he's not here, our kids are doing well, thank God. Credit to a lot of different forces, but certainly our administrative team leads that charge. Having him here full-time, we think, would benefit our whole student population from a safety and security standpoint. So if you had to ask me, what's one thing I would make a recommendation for you to would be to move him to full-time. It's a partnership with the sheriffs. It's a shared service with the sheriff's department. But I think it would pay dividends, and he can have more time even when we have a DARE officer that works with our elementaries. So when the DARE officer is not in Beaton Town Elementary, he could be down there a little bit more often too. Be a larger footprint across our whole student body. And then one item that hasn't been in the budget, and I know we've had a lot of talk about a librarian aide. Same principle. Both our elementaries have very strong certified library media specialists. They have revamped their libraries. I want to take one of the things I want to do with the board is take you around the school and just show you some of the changes. But all of our libraries are looking different, and they've been stepping up to the plate. But the same thing happens to those librarians when we have one aide who goes back and forth between the two libraries, right? So when that aide is in the library, the librarian can full force focus on teaching kids and working in different ways with our students. And we've been able to add some enrichment activities. They engage in both of them engage in our BAS offerings, and they do teach kids. But the second we add another aide in, again, look at the line, for the line, they have access to teaching our elementary kids for the day. And I think, again, so for a relatively minimal expenditure between the two aides, what we're receiving in the middle school, high school, what we're receiving in both elementaries, I think it's a great return on our investment. So Well, we don't have a lot of changes this year like we've had in other years. I think we're being pretty creative with our expenditures to get a lot of content, different type of content delivered to our kids. So one of the things Mr. King asked was, so you see some of the things that happen, some of the items that I just went through that happened when you moved to contingency. Some of the other items are over in red. And Mary, why don't you go through?
Those would be the mandated items or the defined items that SED classifies as contingent items. And adopting a contingent budget prohibits a district from spending any money in certain areas, including community use of school facilities, unless all costs are reimbursed to the district. New equipment purchases, non-essential maintenance, capital expenditures except in emergencies, certain field trips, and certain student supplies. Contingency rules also cap the growth of the administrative component of the three-part budget. These requirements existed prior to the tax cap levy, and they still exist now.
So one of the items that I just want to point out before I take questions, we've done a tremendous job here opening up our facilities to our community. I would definitely say we're very close to a community school. The only thing that we don't really have on site, we do have mental health practitioners on site. We don't have the dentist. We don't have the doctor on site. But in community school, you have that. Other than that, we've opened up our facilities to our community. Our fitness center is thriving. We allow access nonstop. We were in here on Saturday. We had a Pee Wee wrestling tournament going on for our wrestlers. We had students in here for our National Honor Society, and other folks come in, or excuse me, not National Honor Society, it was the Spelling Bee was Friday. We had everybody here on Friday night. So Friday night we left at 10:15, came back for the Technology Summit, but it was our Model UN students, there we go, our Model UN students were in here as well. So we open up our facilities in a lot of different ways to the community and locally. We had Mr. I'm drawing a blank here, from Beatmantown Youth Commission, Mr. Copley came in just recently. I wanted to know, are we going to have the same type of offering we had last year, which was phenomenal? And we said, well, we don't know. It's budget contingent and it's ELT contingent. So those are things we have to wrestle with. At the end of the day, if you're on contingency, it's going to look different. It's going to look different than what it looked like last time we were on contingency. We'll follow the law to the best of our ability, and I really want people to realize that our district will not have that same feel, at least for 1 year, of opening the doors and welcoming our community in. Other than that, you know, you see student supplies. Obviously, that's concerning. I don't even need to discuss that. Equipment, certain types of professional development. They're building use fitness center, community education, and the outlay project would go away, and we'd probably bring that up again next year. So questions on the differences?
Are the grant monies in any way impacted if you go to a contingency and what you can do with them?
Yeah, that's a great point, Savvy. The grant monies are not impacted. So we right now have an ELT grant, but we need to go back to the drawing board with different providers, including our teachers. So we would hate to actually have to turn that grant down and give it back, but that's what a lot of districts have done. That's how we actually received the grant, because other districts turned it down. They couldn't implement the grant. If we can implement the grant again, there's no contingency budget doesn't affect like technology purchases or equipment purchases that are in the grant. Now you can't just go say, okay, we're going to use this grant to make whole in these other areas that are buildings and grounds. It has to follow the goals
of the grant.
Right. But there are no prohibitions based on contingency within any of our grants, which is a positive, as long as we keep the grants. And I need people to realize, too, is these grants, they come and we're super happy. They'll go away at some point, too. You know, we've been very, very fortunate. But at some point, they'll go away, and they sprinkle those grants around in other places. Other questions? Thank you.
also reports, Michaela, do you have a report?
Oh, yes, I do. No, I have some things. A big topic in like our student body right now, is our 10th grade sophomores going to Washington, D.C., I believe in May, for an ELT field trip for 3 days. They're very excited about that, and they're going to be going on a few tours, seeing some things down there, some tourist attractions. It's a good opportunity for them. Our spring sports are starting, and we got our boys' tennis team back this year. It hasn't been here in a few years, and Mr. Coe, I believe, is going to be coaching that. The spelling bee, we had our winner again this year, Grant Decker. He maintained his title, I guess you could say. And then the master movement is going on in both elementary schools. The elementary staff was in the middle school gym, taking a few lessons and understanding what it was all about. And they're having some open house kind of things at the elementaries yesterday and this evening. That's all I got.
Thanks, Michaela.
Yeah, I do have one item that I need everybody to realize, too, that could impact our budget. And this is really important. I was on the phone today with Principal Campbell. I'm not sure if this mic's working. I said, I have to go. Here comes the commissioner. And I went over and talked to the Commissioner of Education regarding the idea that the federal government has said that if our opt-outs, this is really concerning, they said if states don't address their opt-out issue, and if their opt-outs are still past a certain level, you are at the risk, the serious risk, of losing your Title I funding. And I said to the commissioner, I said, I believe that you're a person of courage and tremendous courage, or you wouldn't be in this position that you're in. At Beatmantown, we had the lowest opt-out rate in the county, but we have the highest amount of money that we receive from Title I funding. So if you were to attack Title I funding, you're attacking the district that's actually achieving your goal at the highest level. I said, forget all that. More importantly, what we're here to do is sometimes what we need to do is stand up and fight for the people who don't stand up and fight for themselves. Mm-hmm. And Title I money isn't directed to the people who are opting out of tests. Now, some kids that receive Title I services, they do opt out of the test. But that conversation is not driven by people. Generally speaking, that conversation is not generated by people in poverty. It's a different type of conversation driven by different type of people. But our kids that need the extra services because they live in poverty, and it's not just because they live in poverty, but our kids that need those services will no longer have those services based on an opt-out movement. And I said, not one student that lives in poverty got on and did a robocall. That was NICET robocall people in New York State. So for us to attack Title I funds, which are meant to help our neediest students, to me, is unconscionable, and we need to fight against that. And that's from our federal government. But if we don't, and I don't see that we're going to develop a plan in New York where we don't do that, we could actually lose this year $500,000 in our title money as well. So things could be great here at Beatmantown, but also there's a lot of variables. Our grants, I'll look at Debbie because she has a question about our grants. Our grants are variables, and Title I money for the first time is a huge variable, and it's going to be driven truly by the federal government, how our state responds, and what's our participation rate in the opt-out. So it's scary. I just need to bring it away.
Committee reports, audit committee.
am I surrogate?
If you want, mail on that's fine.
Let's see here. We went over the warrant reports, and we went over the internal audit. Everything looked pretty good. Mary, there was nothing outstanding or different in our audit committee that would be of unusual nature.
The audit committee reviewed the reserve policy that went through the policy committee.
It's the one you have in the packet for this board session. So Eric Bell and Mary did a great job putting together a nice policy for all the reserve. It really kind of explains how the money's being placed and where it's being placed. So it's not only good for us as a board, but also for the public to understand how the money's being moved and used. But it's the first time that we actually have a policy in place, even though it's being worked on.
All right. There's no new report for operations policy committee. An email went out to the member, I believe, went out to the entire board about a policy that's going to be coming up shortly.
Yeah.
The members of that can set up a meeting and just carbon copy me because I'm probably going to go to it as well. Appreciate that. New business. Before the consent agenda, resolve that the superintendent of schools recommends the Board of Education that the following resolutions on this consent agenda are hereby approved: minutes, CSE, CPSE, and 504 recommendations.
Motion.
Right there. By Debbie, second by Kathy. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. I need to make a motion before we go to miscellaneous. We've been handed the resolution for the Beacon Town Central Schools Smart School Investment Plan. So I'd make a motion to amend number 7, which we just passed, but I'd ask this be put on new business. So I need a second for that. Second by Ed. Is there any discussion? All right, and since it's financial, I believe we need a roll call vote for this.
To
pass it. All those in favor of adding it to the agenda?
Aye.
All right. Discussion. So, roll call vote.
Andrew Brockway?
Yes.
Kathy Buckley?
Yes.
Joseph Graziani?
Yes.
Michael Hagedorn? Leonard King?
Yes.
Ed Marin?
Yes.
Jason Marsh? Debbie Pasno?
Yes.
Colleen Stone?
Yes.
Resolve that the superintendent of schools recommends the Board of Education that the following resolutions on this consent agenda, calendar, and transportation on March 19th are hereby approved.
Motion.
Motion by Debbie.
Second.
Second by Joseph. Which one? That's part of 6. So we went through that, and that's 7. Discussion.
Is there a question on the Regents are on Memorial Day, right?
The Regents are not on Memorial Day.
No, they're not on it. Well, they're
on the vacation.
They're near the vacation thing. So that's a state set thing through NYSED, is that right?
Yes.
Look at the calendar. I don't know. Just the conversation is maybe something to have with NYSED, because I know that I've had parents asking about how that impacts, you know, their performance on Regents. Because
is it not this year or the 2017?
The new one. It has been a question, and it seems to be recurring. So I don't know if it's something to talk about or think about, a discussion with NYSED about that, because if some people are having a problem with Regents as it is, and if the Memorial Day weekend puts a kind of a curve on it for some people, maybe it doesn't make them have to shed best light. So I know there's nothing we can do about it, but
I haven't had that question at all brought to me. Okay. And I don't know that our principals have, because they usually make me aware of just about everything, which I appreciate. But I don't, when I look at the June calendar, I'm not sure the interplay between Memorial Day and when we give Regents exams. So do you want to have them either contact me and explain to me, or do you want to explain it to us?
I'll do that. I know that there have been some questions about it, but nothing significant about how it affects it.
Justin?
So what the state has been doing, whenever there's a new exam for that, it's the very first time it's been offered. So this year it's the Algebra 2 Regents is early, so they always do that because they score the exams and they send them to the state, and then the state does the conversion chart, because it's the very first time. So typically all the Regents are given in the teens in June, like the 14th or the 16th or something, right, like the 21st. But whenever it's the first time it's offered like usually June 1st or 2nd. So this year the Algebra 2 Regents is, I believe, June 2nd or 3rd, whatever that Wednesday is, which theoretically if we have 2 remaining snow days would be the day we get back from that long weekend. So it's not typically an every year thing. It has been the past two or three years, but there's always one regions earlier, and that's just because it's the new Common Core algebra, the new Common Core geometry, and now the new Common Core trig regions. So it won't fall over vacation, but it is right after a long weekend, which on the original school calendar would not have happened, but with the additional snow days remaining, that's where it's happening.
Thank you.
So do you see parents taking extra long vacations on Memorial Day to where you might have people that aren't going to be back here? I mean, don't they think it's important enough to...
The only issue that I've seen is more... I haven't had any concerns from parents. The teachers have come with concerns and they've asked if they're allowed to offer review sessions. So I know our Algebra 2 trig teacher is offering, except for Sunday, I think Friday, Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, she's having multiple review sessions over the break. So to ensure that students don't have that long gap if they choose to come in for the review.
So last year would have been the first time with the algebra. And then, so there's this
geometry
year,
last year.
Geometry,
yeah. 2 years ago would have been algebra.
Okay, then geometry.
So
the question is, thanks for adding some clarity. So is that what you're saying? It
was general concern because, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because there was a question of both how does it impact teachers with the break, if they are staying because they're having they have the commitment to support the students, right? And they can't really take a good break if... also, if parents have plans to go long vacations and then suddenly this changes, or if students end up having to go on vacation and come back and not really prepared or to take the test. So the question really goes out to the administration is, how do you see this impacting you? Is it adverse or not? Does it even matter? Is it something that we should ask NYSA to move slightly over a little bit to help everybody out?
Right.
So I think, why don't we just do this? Because we did have some conversation at our ATM on the calendar. And why don't we gather more facts and we'll sit back down. This doesn't come into play until September.
Sure.
So we gather some more facts. We'll sit back down with our team. We'll talk to some teachers. We'll look at what may be a new regents that's coming up over the next couple of years, and come back and give the full board a report so that everybody has a complete understanding of the issue.
There shouldn't be any next year, 16, 17. I think 17, 18 would be the next new region. So I think for the calendar that's being approved now, there shouldn't be any effect. There should be no early June regents next year.
So that Algebra 2 is not next year's year?
The Algebra 2 is this year. Spring. This
okay.
Month.
Yeah. So that would affect this. Calendar.
To me, it seems like what would have the most impact is actually the additional snow day.
Yes, correct.
So, which is a manipulative.
Correct.
So, we obviously can't alter the regions,
right.
But consider the snow day.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
I think Michaela had a point.
Yeah, because I know students and teachers who are dealing with this regions this year, and then an additional break that they're going to have from school, the sophomores, is going to that trip to D.C. that week. So they're going to come back from maybe 5 or 6 day break and then take that test. So that's going to, I think, personally would impact the test scores. I don't know if that's any information that you guys want to know or anything.
That's important.
Anybody else? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I have to go back to page 2. This one. Resignations and appointments. No, 6 and 7. This one and this one together.
So back to page 2. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education that the following resolutions on the consent agenda, resignations and appointments, are hereby approved.
Motion.
Motion by Leonard.
Second.
Second by Kathy. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Alright, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education that the following resolutions on the consent agenda are hereby approved. Policies. Is there a motion?
Motion.
Motion by Debbie, second by Joseph. Discussion. These have all been reviewed by the policy committee. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolve the superintendent of schools recommends the Board of Education that the following resolutions on the consent agenda are hereby approved financial reports.
Motion.
Motion by Brian.
Second.
Second by Pauline. Any discussion? Okay, roll call.
Andrew Brockway.
Yes.
Kathy Buckley.
Yes.
Joseph Graziani.
Yes.
Michael Agadorn. Leonard King.
Yes.
Ed Marin.
Yes.
Jason Marsh. Debbie Pasanow.
Yes.
Pauline Stone.
Yes.
All right, additional items to discuss. We need to set time for voting on the Champlain Valley Educational Services Board of Elections members and the administrative budget. We've set that for April 21st, 2016. Is that what we're doing?
No, it's a Thursday night.
Okay.
Well, it doesn't have to be night, it's a Thursday.
Does anyone have any conflicts with that date, April 21st?
Traditionally, one thing we've done is had the meeting in the morning. Mm-hmm. It's quick. There's not a lot of just usually we completed the discussion around this table. Whatever you guys feel best.
I think I have something going on in the morning that day, but we need five members. Does anyone have? I'll leave at that date because I'm assuming that we'll have.
I should be back from Albany by then.
Okay.
The trial I need to.
Just as a thought, we have a board meeting that Tuesday.
It has to be that day.
It has to be that day. This board sets
the time. Oh,
because okay. Everybody's doing it at the same time.
Yeah, every district's doing it at the same time, the same day.
Whatever time you want.
What time's good for everybody? Do you want to do it in the morning or the afternoon?
Morning works great for
me. Yeah, first thing in the morning.
But I am flexible, so
what,
I can.
What time?
I like drop off done, like 7:45.
If that's the case, I can make it.
Of which I could even do earlier if that worked better for you.
So 7:45, good for everybody on the 21st of April.
You have to be at work for 8:30, that would work.
It's going to take like 5 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So 7:45 in the superintendent's office?
Mm-hmm.
I did drop into the portal talking points from Dr. Davey regarding the budget, CBS budget.
All right.
If you have questions, feel free to email me.
May 5th, 2016 is the 17th annual Top 10 Recognition Dinner. I think we had a pretty good group there last year. Pauline was there, Leonard was there, I think. Leave it. I know there's quite a few. Kathy was there as well. And they do a good job putting on and showcasing the area's top students. So if we could get people to. Do we need to have a reservation for that? Or,
yes, I okay. Sent a reservation.
So if you want to email Joanne, if you don't know whether or not it's, whether you can attend, it's May 5th at 6 p.m.
She told me down to go, because my granddaughter's going to be there.
Yes.
And then preparing our students for future success is April 7th, 2016, from 4:30 to 6:30 at Franklin Academy High School.
I will go if there's a board member that's going to.
Okay. So if you're interested in that as well, email Joanne. Set aside another 10 minutes for public comment if anyone from the public wishes to address the board. Seeing that at this time, we need to appoint a clerk pro tem for executive session. Leonard is motioning himself. Is there a second?
I'll second Leonard.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And then motion to go into executive session to discuss the employment history of a particular person or persons. Motion by Debbie.
Second
by Joseph. I anticipate that we're going to take action on at least one of the items after executive session. So if anyone from the public wants to attend, we will be taking action.
Okay.
I anticipate that we will be. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Yeah, you all, as you know, the governor is opposed.